Hello, everyone. I'm Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife with Midwifery Business Consultation. I am meeting with Sarah Kinberg here. She's one of the co-founders of GynZone. We're doing a few videos because, especially with being in Denmark and wanting to get international education and learning from each other, she is the best of the best with suturing and perineal repairs and just that whole support process. So, Sarah, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm delighted.
So Sarah and I, one of the discussions we wanted to have, especially in the United States, we're so good at protecting the birth, protecting her prenatally, but I think there's areas of improvement for that caliber of postpartum support. Our healthcare system doesn't, we get paid to catch the baby and then 6 week postpartum visit. Like there's other parts of the world that you get multiple home visits, you get so much support. So trying to get our culture to shift the value of postpartum support, I wanted to focus on suturing side. We in the United States tend to say it's a procedure. It looks beautiful. It looks back together. That's the extent of our follow up. And I would love for your expertise to talk about the potential complications and not really recognizing the tears appropriately, not putting the anatomy back together, like all these things that there's silent souls around the world that just don't express sometimes what's happened.
Sure. So fundamentally, you can say that when a person is having a baby, the perineum will heal very rapidly after birth. So even though you might not suture a second degree tear, it will heal without infection, and she might even be continent and happy, but she will discover as she's reassuming intercourse at some times that she might not feel if the penis is inside or outside the vagina because the vaginal opening is wide and she's not able to contract her pelvic floor.
Yep, that tone is not there anymore, that muscle tone, yeah.
Yeah, so those things were not taught to us as we were graduating as midwives, and we were taught to be natural and not interfering in childbirth and not interfering in natural processes, blah, blah, blah. So we left a lot of second degree tears to be unsutured. And I've worked in India where we also left episiotomies to be unsutured because then the vaginal hole was big and fine for the next baby, so she didn't need any stitches or an episiotomy next time. But then you leave a woman with a very broad vaginal opening for the rest of her life. It's like you're not caring for this woman, that she also has the right to a sexual arousal. And
she's a sexual being. We're looking at, you're a birthing person right now. We're not looking at, you have other identities. So we need to broaden, like, what is this? This hole has multiple functions. Like it's for pleasure and for birthing babies out of it.
Definitely. So the complications that we started seeing as I did my PhD and I dug into looking at the healing 2 days after birth and 10 days after birth and even 6 months after birth, I was surprised by the effect of the episiotomy. We thought that the episiotomy could be made for special occasions and we didn't think that it affected women's lives after birth. But the episiotomies, at least when we evaluate in a Scandinavian setting, we see that 1 in 4 are healing very difficultly, so that they become infected or they heal with hypogranulosis tissue, so there's a red tissue evolving from the tear, and she might feel it's uncomfortable to sit on a chair or go bicycling. So we suddenly realized that by the intervention of the episiotomy, we actually hurted birthing people in our community. So we've actually almost stopped doing episiotomies unless there's a catastrophe and we think that's the only thing that we can do. We would rather apply a vacuum or do some other manual procedures to help the baby out than performing an episiotomy. So that was my first lesson, do no harm. And instead we should work on manual techniques. Currently we're doing trials in our unit where we are lubricating the introitus to see if we can make the baby slide out instead of being dry on the vaginal tissue. So
we like our Astroglide and we use lots of lubricant here. We joke with the mothers, we're making their first slip and slide. That's the big joke. Like we try to make it lighthearted and fun. Like the more slippery we could make it. I mean, that's another fun. I'll love to see the research you have for that part.
And then we're very keen on perineal protection. It's a huge thing in Scandinavia that we aim to avoid anal sphincter injuries. And in our attempt to avoid anal sphincter injuries in first-time mothers, we try all different things. So out of Finland and Norway, we've been taught the Finnish hand grip to place our fingers on the perineum and protect the perineum and hold back the fetal head as it is it's being birthed. So we'll say, breathe, 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 breathe. And we have declined the amount of anal sphincter ruptures just by adjusting the speed of the baby. It might not be exactly this or this intervention. It might be the speed that is having an effect.
And even just the position, I mean, delivering in lithotomy versus hands and knees and squatting, like there's so much fascination with the links of perineal tears and the position and just gravity and her tension. And I would see such terrible third and second degree tears in these 15, 16 year olds, or her own man made shoulder dystocia because of the level of anxiety, the tension. And so we don't give enough credibility. It's not just our hand technique, but the more relaxed we are, the more relaxed the mother is, that also affects the perineal tears and then the complications afterwards.
So in general, I would say there are very few complications to perineal trauma after childbirth. However, if we ask women, they might think there are more problems than midwives or obstetricians think. So I work closely with urogynecologists in the pelvic floor unit, and they stopped evaluating ladies after birthing people after 5 months. At a certain time point, we invited everybody, if they had an anal sphincter rupture, to come and have a visit, and we would do ultrasound scans, and we would talk to them about continence and life and sexual arousal, blah, blah. And our medical doctor said it's an unnecessary visit because they are actually fine. But the birthing people, they loved it. And even the partners loved it. And they said, this is emotionally good that somebody is saying my vulva is fine, my perineum is fine, I'm working beautifully. Even though you might know it and you don't have a problem.
As a clinician, what we view as normal and we take for granted, like just that basic reassurance of having the expert look at it and give that to him actually has reducing the complications. We don't give enough credit for the mental side.
Exactly. And I mean, our children, when they go to school, they evaluate it all the time, and we get feedback as parents saying, yeah, he's on the standard and he can read and he can calculate, la la la. But when we have major trauma to the most important and beautiful part of our body, nobody's evaluating and saying the way, oh, that's fine or not. So we've changed that shift in at least the Scandinavian setting, where all birthing people are currently offered to be evaluated by a midwife or an obstetrician within the first week after birth, so that we see that things are developing normally. And we have been amazed and surprised by the poor healing of episiotomies, so that we see in 1 in 4, the episiotomy is becoming open again. And we're changing surgical techniques, and we're changing suture materials. And even though we changed, we didn't see any change in the 25% that are healing.
All because it was a clean cut versus that normal jagged tear. That's amazing, just the difference.
Yeah.
So no, especially in the United States, because we don't do a lot of postpartum, like I've been very fortunate in our area, we have wonderful women's health physical therapists that do a lot of pelvic floor therapy, but not everybody has access to that. So I do see there's a value, like even just, but I always looked at it as it's just because you had a baby, everything's weak. I never correlated it could potentially be my suturing technique that caused some of that weakened pelvic floor. So talking about like urinary incontinence, rectal incontinence, or some ladies weakened pelvic floor, they have to push a button to really, like there's so many things we just don't talk about that could be prevented with really having that next level of education. What are other things you've seen women express as complications or concerns you've improved with quality after everybody started doing this training the last 10 years?
I'm just having to think about that. I think the most important thing that we've been told is that our birthing population evaluate our insecurity very poorly. So if we say, I'm not quite sure, then they're not quite sure, and it does affect them for a long, long time if we were not sure if the repair was fine. So we need to engage in anxiothgiasm and using a nice vocabulary when we talk about the vulva area. We will tell her she's healing beautifully and her midwife or doctor did a good job. So we have trained ourselves in being positive when we communicate instead of saying, I don't know if it's right, or maybe you will suffer from incontinence in 20 years. What kind of message is this? This will leave you for insecurity for 20 years. So we try to emphasize that things will be fine. But we also open a door saying, if it is not as you expected, you're always welcome to come back into this pelvic floor unit because we're experts. We hope not to see you, but if you have the need, you're most welcome. So we don't tell her or the partner all things that can go wrong. We don't talk about infections and hematoma and fistulas because that's too much information. When you just had a baby, you need to know that the baby is fine and you will be breastfeeding because you can make milk and you will be an excellent parent. That is all that you need to know and focus on. If it's not working out that way, then we will help you. But I think we should take care sometimes over informing people about things that can go wrong, because then they will put light onto that part of the road instead of putting light on the baby and being a nice parent.
Yeah. Well, and I liked with your style with the educational platform, just the pictures, like even just the charting, the documentation, the involvement of the women in the decision-making process. Like, this is where the tear was. This is what I healed. This is like, we're going to check on it, like giving a proactive expectation every couple of days. We'll look at it throughout the healing process and versus just, oh, we're only going to look if there's an issue problem because it should heal normal and fine. Like, it's just having a different approach of standards and expectations given to the families.
And actually, we do encourage ladies in our birth communities to have a full photo of their own genitalia. So we ask them to take a vulva selfie during pregnancy so that they know the details of their body. So if she comes in and she has a high perineum of 4 centimeters and the standard is 3 centimeters, I need to know which standard she is. Some of us have a low perineum and some have a high by biological diversity. And we would love for the lady to have a picture before and after so that she can say, I was restored as I wanted to be and I looked as before. That also helps us if we see a lady 6 months after birth and say, what is the problem? Was it a poor primary repair or was it a poor healing? Because that has to do with insurance and legal circumstances. Well, we want to make sure we did our best and that our patients can expect the best. But sometimes we cannot guarantee that healing is perfect because if she starts bicycling or has intercourse within the first few days, the stitches might become undone. And that is not a medical condition. Yeah.
When the ladies sit Indian style or they've got 3 flights of steps, they're going up every day to check on their other kids. Like, these are educational opportunities, like sometimes get forgotten to talk about where like, oh, it'll heal fine. And we don't give enough that first week of really being careful yourselves because it's not just the stitches we pick, but it's, so that's a great opportunity to improve the outcomes purely because we do a better job of educating or giving them some resources after the baby and those wonderful discharge instructions. So.
And the amazing thing about working in the hospital where I work is that we're allowed to take photos if the parent does consent, so that we can share our experiences and we can use telemedication. So if I'm in doubt about whether healing is perfect, I can just put the picture on a platform where I can ask a doctor to evaluate, is this fine or do you need to see her again? So the lady does not have to be looked upon by 10 different experts. We can evaluate.
Have somebody come in the room and now there's a new person, now there's a new person. Yeah.
But we've struggled a bit whether it's ethical or not to have a photo, but our patients say it's very tolerable. As long as we can't see their name and their identity, then it's just part of a healing process and anybody can evaluate.
Yeah, we take pictures of skin rashes. We take pictures of incision sites. We need to take past, like, we are healthcare providers. We want to give what's best for them. We document, like, for wounds and sites, like, there's detailed pictures all over the place of progress. So it's this mind shift just because it's a private part. This is HIPAA. This is a private, this is a secure system. We're treating and we're caring for this woman, this family. We need to shift our mindset that there is good quality measures by having progress noted.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, Sarah. I am so excited for meeting you and your team a couple months ago. And I think it's like perfect timing with the Hegenberger Speculum, Maylene Hegenberger, your other wonderful partner. It's going to get FDA approval soon. I'm so excited to get in the United States her wonderful speculum that will help with suturing and that to collaborate with your education. I truly believe the next few years, you are going to make so many wonderful changes in the United States. And I am very grateful to have you and your talents.
Thank you for inviting me. I would love to meet you. So I hope that we will meet during conferences.
Yeah, we were brainstorming in 2022. We need to get you and Maylene over the other side of the sea and do some on-site training, do a roadshow. And I would love to participate with you. Thank you.